Well, hello and welcome to the Leadership Educator Podcast. My name is Dan Jenkins and I'm Chair and Associate Professor of Leadership and Organizational Studies at the University of Southern Maine.
And I am Lauren Bullock, Assistant Professor of Instruction at Temple University, and we are both excited for today's episode of the Leadership Educator Podcast. This season, Dan and I have two parallel paths. So way back last fall, was it, Dan? Maybe December?
It was, yeah.
We said, what an awesome idea it would be if we discussed, you know, getting involved in professional organizations and attending conferences. We said, you know, conference season is coming up and we want to release some episodes so that as people are thinking about where to go, they can make the best use of that attendance. Well, as we recorded, COVID-19 started emerging, and the next thing you know, our campuses were closed and schools were closed, and we decided to pivot because we knew that leadership educators needed to figure out kind of what was going on, and we thought, well, let's see if we can provide some of that. And so I say two parallel paths because we have a series of those episodes on what to do when you attend a conference, but then we have this beautiful opportunity to talk to leadership educators in the field across the country who are, you know, still trying to meet their mission with their students as well as navigate not only now COVID-19, but also this outbreak of civil unrest that's happening across the country. And so today we are very excited to have Fran Lowe and Sean Ferris from the University of Washington. Welcome, y'all.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
You're welcome. And so we're going to ask you a bunch of questions just to get an idea of what it was like at your university, of how you were able to meet your mission, your program's missions, still offer class, offer programs to students amidst the COVID-19 outbreak and a little bit of the civil unrest piece, if you're willing to talk about it. I'd like to start today, though, with sharing a little bit of background about your school and about the leadership programs that are offered in your respective areas on campus.
Sure. Well, I'll go ahead and get started, which is a brief introduction. So hi again, my name is Fran, and I serve as the Executive Director of the Community Engagement and Leadership Education Center. We call ourselves CELE for short. And so we're essentially a collection of programs and initiatives that all try to support students in developing the knowledge and skills and attitudes that they need to contribute to thriving communities. So our collection of programs support pre-K-12 student success. Our programs also engage undergraduates in a variety of community engaged learning opportunities. We offer leadership education opportunities, and we also support a couple place-based initiatives. So that's a little bit more about who we are as a center. And my colleague Sean is over at in Student Life.
Yeah. So I work in the Division of Student Life. I've had a handful of roles on the University of Washington campus, including some time in student activities where I did a lot more leadership education. Since then, I've transitioned into the Office of the Vice President for Student Life and have served to work on both organizational improvements as well as student success efforts. Currently, I work as our Manager of Student Success, furthering strategic retention and student success efforts towards graduation for the University of Washington.
Awesome, thank you. So let's rewind back to, so it's March sometime, and or maybe it was earlier, I'm not sure, but you'll certainly correct me. So once you heard about the outbreak, you moved to a virtual space for everything, all your programs, all the classes, everything offered by University of Washington. How did you know what to do?
This was back in February, right, Sean?
Yeah.
It was back in February. Yeah.
I actually remember I was in a session with a group that I used to work with quite a bit, 50 students in a very small room in our student union, helping them with one of their leadership programs. And one of the young ladies walked up to the podium and was like, I don't think I feel good. And she's like sweating. And I was like, oh no, this is the outbreak. And it wasn't but 2 weeks later where we had moved to remote instruction. So it was pretty quick. So yeah, mid to late February, I feel like things started getting going on our campus.
Yeah, I remember when we were asked to work remotely and classes were going to pivot remotely. I mean, our faculty and staff body just, I think, did a miraculous job of pivoting so quickly. I think in 1 week, turn classes online, turn programs online. So it was a, yes, I recall it was a very fast turnaround. And
yeah, I said there was a lot of uncertainty on campus too at the time. You know, we were the, I think, the first large institution in the country to go remote. We made that choice early in March. We were fully online, and I remember sitting around with colleagues, quite a few conversations about what comes next. How are we going to move all of this stuff? One of the approaches we took in student life quickly was to bring professionals together to think through, what remote learning could look like, what remote engagement could look like. But it was very unstructured, sort of that peer-to-peer support that you might get at a conference when you're having a conversation about something different. You know, we were just having it over Zoom or over the phone, and it was happening pretty organically.
So you mentioned, that structure was not something that was a luxury at the time. How were decisions made? What process on the fly was implemented in order to respond to, all the different levels of programming that you were responsible for?
I think on our end, our center empowered a lot of the programs to engage in decision-making about how to best respond to our students, our partners. And I remember spending just a lot of time working with staff about how do we, especially around community engagement. These are students who, as part of our course requirement, were volunteering in the community, right? And so all of those in-person kinds of volunteer opportunities in K-12 schools had to stop. Volunteering in person in community organizations had to stop for the physical safety and well-being of the community. I remember having lots of conversations though about how do we hold that tension of protecting our physical safety, yet also we need to show up for community. It's not, important social services were still happening, food still needs to be distributed, shelters are still operating, food is still being grown on farms. How do we show up for community but also keep folks safe? So I know one of the things that our team did was by trying to help to respond to community organizations. We quickly compiled a list of volunteer opportunities that organizations really needed, especially in light of COVID. And, created a website really pretty quickly and posted these and tried to spread the word to students across campus that, if folks feel it's putting a lot of giving students the agency to make those kinds of decisions, right? I remember some colleagues over in the UW Medicine worked with, it was a very much a cross-campus effort to, one of the immediate needs was childcare for healthcare workers, right? UW Medicine is a powerhouse of providing medical support. And so all these healthcare workers needed childcare. And so they quickly created a way to identify students, a lot of students in our community engagement programs who already have a background in working with youth and have background checks, for example, and tried to create a web platform to connect UW students with families in UW healthcare so that they could provide some immediate childcare that was really needed. So those are just a couple of examples. I would say when you asked about how were decisions made, a lot of these were folks were being very, just responding to the immediate need or trying to be really innovative and nimble and creating ways to respond as best we could.
I love that you shared that instead of saying kind of a full stop, you really think about how you're going to move forward in this new space. You're thinking about, so we still have these meetings, we still have these needs, these are our concerns, they're very ramped up, but at the same time, we still have to go out and encourage them. On an earlier episode, I know Dan and I talked about how, I think it was with Scott Allen, we talked about how these present really new opportunities for all of us to just look at how we face these challenges and put some of the leadership theories that we teach about in our class to life. And when you're talking, I hear all of this. I hear like, hey, a little chaos theory, a little servant leadership, you know, a little bit of these pieces. And I think, you know, this is an awesome opportunity to kind of put our money where our mouth is, simply because as we are, like, this is the best classroom our students are going to have. They're going to see us in action, see us like knowing what we're supposed to do, and, or not knowing what we're supposed to do, but knowing this knowledge that we have and that the examples that we share, this is the best time for us to really talk through that. I'm wondering, for you, how did your participants respond to the new opportunities?
So I'll speak for this, the CELI Center programs, and then Sean can speak to efforts in student life. I would say, you know, the students we work with, they were also our partners in identifying some of these ways to connect and still meet the needs and mission of their programs. You know, some examples, you know, I work with a lot of pre-K-12 student success programs, and the student leaders in those programs and staff came up with these wonderful ideas for ways to continue engaging with students. So, you know, some specific examples, you know, students in our Jumpstart program, which is a national program that connects undergrads with low-income preschools, they pivoted really quickly and started these Zoom virtual storytelling sessions where the student leaders would read stories during times when families need to have, you know, entertainment for their kids while they're making meals. So at 11 and 5 every day, they would get on and invite all these preschoolers and their families to a virtual storytelling session. And, you know, this was something that these students just, they were amazing, and they came up with all these great activities to do online, like baking and all sorts of things. Students in our other programs that typically go into schools to tutor or work in high schools to support post-secondary success pivoted to asking teachers like what kinds of supports do they need. A lot of them asked for educational and instructional videos. So all these students like responded, you know, really wonderfully and came up with like a whole array of amazing videos on everything from physics to writing a paragraph to writing a college application, right? And sharing these with teachers so that they could share with their students. So the students were incredibly responsive.
Yeah. Say in my role, I, you know, work on these long-term strategic efforts around success and retention, which retention and sort of, especially when you were, you know, we were going into spring quarter at the time, we've got students who are near graduation, getting them to graduation was really important. But I also had some bandwidth that I could press pause on those things because that was not where everybody's focus was. And so I started working with staff, both in the Division of Student Life and across campus who were serving in leadership educator roles, student engagement roles. And so most of my interaction was with staff in this moment. And I would say that our staff response to this, staff showed a lot of vulnerability. They showed a lot of authenticity. They were, really committed to finding solutions that worked for the communities that they were engaged with. And so there were often what I would hear from folks was, to the extent of, I don't know what the answer is, but together we're going to find the answer. And, we had a lot of staff who were involving students in what the solution was going to look like, which I think is really commendable and something that we can role model for folks as leadership educators. In terms of the student response, I would say it varied throughout the quarters. So we saw folks moving to both asynchronous programming, things like podcasts or online discussion groups. And we also had more synchronous and sort of participatory programming. And what we saw from students is a different level of engagement in each of those. In our International Student Center, they could not necessarily get people together to communicate over Zoom, but they would participate or watch a podcast or respond to a discussion group online. Over the course of the quarter, though, I think some fatigue set in. You know, I think that Zoom fatigue is real. I think both for the students and the staff that we saw participation drop off. in response to all this, I said I was working with staff. One of the things that we did was to gather a group and actually started doing sort of participatory action type research, but just as with a focus on how are we going to respond to all of this. And the first couple of meetings, a lot of information sharing. Here's what we're doing. Here's the programs that we're doing. Here's what we're learning that's working. Here's what's not working. And by the time we got to the end of the quarter, folks were tired, understandably, and participation was low. I remember I was listening to one of your previous podcasts talking about leadership educator identity. And so much of our identity as educators is wrapped up in how our students engage with us, the success that we have in terms of people showing up or the information they share with us. And success really changed over the course of a quarter. And I think that was really challenging for staff. I don't know that they knew exactly how to handle programs that used to get 50 people that all of a sudden got 5. While they had really meaningful dialogues with students, they didn't necessarily see the breadth of impact that they were hoping for. So I think in all of this, it's also important for us to recognize that like this was difficult and things didn't always work out well.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, these are complex adaptive challenges in every way, shape, and form. So I mean, as you reflect, you know, things are, and perhaps you might talk a little bit about, you know, whether or not there is any type of summer programming, you know, going on. But as you think back on, you know, the end of the spring and transitioning out of that, out of the most recent semester, like, what was the outcome? What do you think you did well? And what would you do differently if you had to respond to something like this in the future or in the chance that there's a, you know, a second wave of this?
Not to put you on the spot, Fran, but I feel like your all's work with the leadership symposium is something that you should share because that turned out wonderful.
The hours of time that we spent learning Zoom or putting together an in-person or trying to convert an in-person event to a virtual event, it just took an inordinate amount of time. And I think it'll be easier the second time. Hopefully we wouldn't have to do that, but likely we will, you know. So actually this is a good backstory about how Sean and I have worked together in the past. So 7 years ago we were part of this group of leadership educators that were brought together across campus that with the goal of trying to be more intentional about how the UW is thinking about implementing leadership education programming across campus, and that's how the Husky Leadership Initiative came to be, which is also now part of the SELI Center. But Sean and I were on this subgroup that created what is now the Husky Leadership Certificate Program, and this program's purpose is we realized that there was a gap on our campus where our students are doing so much, like they're practicing leadership in so many different ways, but they're not encouraged or given a space to reflect on their leadership engagement. So the Husky Leadership Certificate Program was created in order to give space for juniors and seniors is through a capstone type of experience to reflect on their leadership development over the course of their undergraduate education. So this program involves being paired up with a one-on-one mentorship. They take a required leadership e-portfolio class that's essentially a guided reflection class for students to make meaning of their leadership experiences. And they create a leadership e-portfolio at the end of this. And then they present their work in a public forum at the end of the year. So now granted our class was, you know, we have about 150 students that go through this program every year, and the students have the option of taking this class either online or in person. So, and most students choose to take the online class. So that was easy because it was already online. But we do have this in-person big, you know, public presentation event at the end of the year that we had to quickly pivot make it online. So it was, it's called the Spotlight on Leadership event. And we had 100, and this was a collaboration, not just with HLC students, but with other student leaders from across campus who were presenting their leadership projects and reflections. So about 100 student presenters, 100 50 guests, you know, who were attending. So we had to figure it out after hours and hours of meeting with our planning group to how are we going to do this? But I think that it was a great space, I think, for students to be able to still share their work. And what actually was an unexpected outcome of that particular event was because students were able to invite so many more of their families and mentors to attend this from all over the world, right? So that was neat to see. So yeah, that was an example of something that I think went well. It took a lot of planning, lots of, you know, technical types of learning, and hopefully we'll be able to make it a smoother planning process in the future.
I love that. I love the like practical examples that you're sharing, because it makes it seem like the students aren't just doing work to do work. Like they are presenting themselves in a fashion that they would or would need to, as you know, in their professional careers. And it all kind of came out of this like massive outbreak. I think it's like the unintended opportunities that are being provided. And I think it sounds like there your teams are working together to really make meaningful spaces for students to showcase that their leadership growth, which ultimately is like what we're being tasked to do. I love that you're talking a lot about this, the in-person opportunities and how the work continues to go. Are you still like doing some work for your students? Like, are they still in touch with you during the summer? As like, I know in Seattle, there's, I think it's CHAZ, which is the open space, the autonomous zone, that is, that information is spreading across the country about this space and kind of, you know, how they're organizing to really impact change. Are your students involved in that? Or are you supporting them? Like, are they taking what you've taught them in leadership classes and applying it? Are you seeing that anywhere?
Yes, absolutely. To answer your question, and also my anecdotal experiences with some individual students who I work with who are really getting involved in the community organizing that's happening in Seattle. We also just had commencement the other day, so a lot of this programming just wrapped up. You know, we're on the quarter system here, and so our transition to summer happens a lot later than many others. But this absolutely has been on my mind. You know, the leadership portfolio program, the SCE leadership certificate program that Fran was talking about. You know, when she and I were creating it, one of the things that we thought of was how do students who are in the community doing leadership engagement? They can't necessarily do it on campus. They're commuter students. They have off-campus jobs. They have family responsibilities. They have things that don't allow them to be engaged on campus. And how do we take what they're doing in their community and allow them to make meaning of that, to gain credentialing for that, and to have that be you know, more of a capital L leadership experience than maybe it would otherwise be seen as. I think that is absolutely relevant right now. You know, we have students who are, you know, they're marching, they're protesting, they are organizing in the community, they are participating with their families in discussions about race and inequality in ways that they've never done before. They may be folks who have been on social media, you know, presenting their lives in one way, and they're all of a sudden transitioning to talk about something that has additional meaning to them, but that is more difficult, right? All of this is worth celebrating via the lens of leadership. And it's also worth making sure that they are getting something out of. How do we do that exactly? I think that that's one of the challenges that's in front of us. I do think we're on good footing at the UW in terms of the baseline that Fran has established with the Husky Leadership Certificate and the SELI Center. But as we look forward, you know, we may have months, I know folks don't want to look at it this way, but we may have months where we're not back in the physical classroom. I think about that leadership program that I was working with in February. I can't imagine 50 students in a small room in the near future. And so how do we help students who are engaged in the community, are engaged with their family, they're displaying leadership? How do we help them make meaning of that in really positive ways? And I haven't even mentioned the idea that, you know, we're coming into a political season where we're going to have all sorts of students engaged in political organizing for one cause or another, that all of that should count as leadership And we should find ways to make that meaningful.
I love like all of what you just shared, and especially because like as faculty members, we're right. High five. If I was in person with you, give you an air high five. Or like I tell my students in class, I say, if this were a poetry slam, we'd be snapping right now. But you know what I love? It's really about us putting like the terminology and like the titles and the theories to, you know, to what they're experiencing. It's like the best gift of project-based learning ever, because we don't have to even create the projects. Like they're finding the projects. We are literally just, you know, putting kind of our knowledge out there and saying, okay, so what you're experiencing is X. And, you know, and we talk about your core values. The reason why this connects or relates to you is because your value is X. And so it just feels like it's, I hate to say an easier season, but I feel like now people are open to this conversation and we can come in with what we have to bring to those students and help them, as you said, make meaning and make sense of this. I love that you shared all of that. Dan, I don't know if you, sorry, I may have jumped the gun and got a little bit high-fivey before it was time. I don't know what you have to say about
that. No, I want to echo what you had to say. It's awesome to see how much that, you know, you mentioned earlier about how you're modeling some of these behaviors and you've talked in so many ways without saying the word, but you've been empowering the students in your programs in so many different ways. And in particular, it would seem, and you know, in this particular situation, that there seems to be this rejuvenation of in-person activism, because it has to be like so short-lived that it needs to be more meaningful, and then we have to reflect on it, you know, even more so. But the organizing that does occur in virtual spaces, and so much of it does, I think that our students have gotten so much more creative with how they have to do this, because okay, if we're going to avoid and ignore some of these social distancing things because of these causes that we believe in, like we better make this count. And I think that we're seeing much more organized activism and demonstrations of young people in particular than I think I can remember in movements in recent past. It just didn't seem as organized, or it seemed more that younger individuals were leaning more on older generations for organization and for modeling, where there seems to be a lot of bottom up, and I love it. And because that's what we preach as leadership educators. And so I love the stories that you shared and how you were able to illustrate some of that for us. Lauren, anything else or just Fran? That, yeah.
Really quickly, I just want to say it makes sense that you say that, because Generation Z, they're one of the characteristics for that community is they don't care about authority. So a lot of it is like, we used to be reverent. And I love and hate it, but they're not waiting for like adults to solve the problem. Like, you know, I joke like, you know, they can't change a tire, but they can change the world. And like, they are out there advocating. They don't care who's in charge. They just are like, these are our demands and you need to meet them. We'll write letters. We'll get on social media. We'll protest. We'll do all of the things so that you can make this place like, you know, just better for everyone, which I respect.
One thing that's sort of lingering in my mind with all of this too is the new opportunity within leadership education to perhaps sort of readdress issues of race and inequality in a way that we necessarily haven't done before. And I think that, you know, I identify as a white cis male. I think that I was rarely asked in leadership circles to think about how those specific identities influence my work, right? We talk about sort of privilege, generally speaking, but not necessarily to get specific about how does whiteness play into my identity as a leader and how I engage with folks. And I think that this generation of students is more interested in that conversation. I think that there is more pressure on white folks to engage in that conversation and to do that critical reflection, perhaps, than there has ever been. And so I think that that is an additional opportunity that we should try to find a way to seize.
I agree with the need to really, as we think about leadership education, I know that these conversations, I really appreciate how they're happening and in the Leadership Education Academy group, for example, Dan. But just, I feel like it's issues of racial equity needs to be absolutely integrated with when we're thinking about what is leadership education, what is leadership development. So Sean mentioned, like right now we just finished off our end of the year graduations, and we also held a virtual graduation with all of our SELE Center graduating seniors. And one of the messages that we were trying to kind of hold was just, you know, this moment of polarity, right? There's here we are, we're in a joyful place to be celebrating all these, the hard work of all of our graduating seniors. At the same time, like, our world is in crisis right now. And these students are pushing on us, and we're trying to support them in, calling them to be, if racial equity is one of our shared values, right? And how do we actually not just talk about it and say the word, but actually turn it into action, right? Education, action, and healing is kind of the mantra that I am personally holding right now about how to really live and really embody this notion of what it means to work towards racial equity. And so how do we teach our students to be anti-racist leaders? And so for us, it means really trying to help students ask these critical questions of their own positionality, right? And how can they work towards, I think, a big conversation right now and all over the country. It's, folks have been talking about this for so long, but now it's like in like CNN, to talk about systemic racism and how do we, as leaders, move the needle on changing systems, which is a big, and I think our students are absolutely leading the way in this.
Yeah, I really appreciate both of your perspectives, and I'm reflecting a little bit too on learning you had shared this, some of the behaviors and things that you might come to expect from Generation Z. And so, thinking back, and I can't remember the name of the list, but it's like, the 20 things that a freshman entering, going back maybe 10 years, hey, they don't know what a cassette tape is, or they don't use CDs. But now it's like one of the things, and I don't want to oversimplify this at all, but one of those things is they've always known what it's been like to have had a non-white president. And so this idea of systemic, racism and moving towards anti-racist policies, in their experience, there are different ways to do things. There is more diversity in the United States than there ever has been before in elected positions and positions of leadership. And while in some disciplines and some organizations it's moving slower than it is in others, we're still seeing this diversification happen. And so this, I think, has helped to propel this movement in ways that this generation, and I love that too, Lord, they might change the world, but they can't change a tire, And so like we're seeing this in ways that we should be proud. And I really, appreciate the opportunity to listen to some of the stories that y'all shared about how you're seeing that in Seattle and in other parts of the university and other areas that y'all are working in. And is there anything that we didn't ask that you want to share, either about some of the student activism or any of the adaptive changes that you had to make with respect to COVID-19?
I was just reading our president's response to our Black Student Union and their demands for changes in the police force. And I think about the way that, and kind of talked about this earlier, that this is falling to this, a certain generation of students to demand the change that is negatively affecting them and the burden that is placed on them. So not only are they receiving the impacts of inequality, but then they're the ones who are out there being forced to make the change. And I think that something that we need to really sort of keep it front of mind is, if we're going to engage students in making meaning out of these experiences, how do we also make it count for them? Because they are doing so much work. That burden is so heavy. And for us to look at what their work is and say, oh, well, this is just a great opportunity for you to learn, that is not sufficient. We have to find other ways to make their work, their labor, their burden meaningful and impactful, not just for their community, but for them individually. They need to benefit from this work.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that's that next step, that next charge, not just valuing it for themselves, but just honoring it for others that they're impacting. Thank y'all so much, Sean French, for joining us today. We really appreciate you taking the time during your busy schedules to speak with us. I mean, we want to wish you future success this summer and entering into next year as your university figures out, what that looks like.
Thanks.
Thanks so much for having us.
Absolutely. Good luck to you all as well. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
And that wraps up this episode of the Leadership Educator Podcast. We hope you enjoyed listening at home or walking your dog or engaging in another activity where you are practicing social distancing.
We are the gurus of social distance podcasting, as we are separated by 6 states, more than the CDC required 6 feet.
Well, that is what we do. So way to be a leader in that area. So jokes aside, thank you for joining us today. We invite you to follow us on Twitter. I am at @Dr_leadership and Lauren is at @MrsLaurjb. That's Miss Laura JB. We want to encourage you to listen to the full episodes as they are released, as we can only share a fraction of the amazing stories that our guests shared. You can find the episodes wherever podcasts are available. And we also encourage you to rate us 5 stars, as the more you rate us, the easier it is for others to find us.
We'd also like to thank the James M. Cox Jr. Institute for Journalism, Innovation, Management, and Leadership within the Grady College of Journalism and Mass Communication at the University of Georgia. The support was facilitated by Dr. Keith Herndon, William S. Morris Chair in New Strategy and Management.
That's right. And our wonderful theme music was composed, performed, and mixed by Dr. Matthew White, trumpeter, composer, and educator. And he's currently the Associate Professor of Trumpet, Coordinator of Jazz and Commercial Music, and Director of Ensembles at Coastal Carolina University. He's also a Guggenheim Fellow, some new news. You can check him out, yeah, at www.mattwhitejazz.com. Matt, thank you so much for sharing your musical genius with our audience. And finally, thank you to the Association of Leadership Educators. Check out what the ALE has to offer at leadershipeducators.com. And we hope you will listen to our next episode wherever you get your podcasts.